This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is Lauren Lester, the voice of Robin and Nightwing.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review,
hosted by Cal and Liam,
streaming at DCAUReview.com
and on your favorite podcast app.
Gotham City is out of control.
An entire city screaming in fear.
Supervillains walk the streets, preying on the innocent.
They will learn the true nature of harm.
The police are powerless. A creature prowls this urban wasteland.
Who's that?
He moves in darkness. For some, he is a rumor. A name whispered in the corridors of the underworld, waiting for the chance to strike. Let every criminal know the acid taste of fear.
You crazy!
Bat! Giant bat!
Gotham has forgotten what justice means. The Dark Knight is here to remind them.
He comes.
Who are you?
Batman. Good guys wear black.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 268 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your two hosts, Cal, with me, our other host, our good friend, our good brother, the man that runs, well, our Twitter page, but, like, not everybody's, not the Royal Wee's Twitter page. It's the DCAU Review Twitter page, and the man that runs the DCAU Review Threads page.
That's right.
If this doesn't date this episode, then I don't know what will. It's Liam. Liam, welcome to episode 268 of the DCAU Review.
That's right. We are back. And yes, if you are listening to this around the time it airs, when this Threads malarkey is going on, head over to that website and find us, same username at DCAU Review. Not sure how much use it'll get other than just up, you know, posting when we have a new episode, but we'll see how it goes.
I love, if there's anything that we've learned on this podcast from day one, we've talked about how much we love the meta and all of its subsidiaries, whether it be the Facebook or the Instagram, and now we are graced with yet another app that can mine our data, and we could not be more excited about it. Clearly.
So great. So happy to be on another site owned by Mark Zuckerberg. And, you know, as an alternative to being on a site owned by Elon Musk, I just, you know, as the great Earl Bowen voicing Simon Stagg and, in Justice League once said, let's just have a nice toast here to unbridled capitalism.
Yes, indeed. Enough talking about all of that shenanigans, though. We are here to review, Liam, an episode of the DCAU, and that is, this week we are continuing with our reviews in Batman the Animated Series, the original, the OG, if you will, and we have an interesting one this week. We have a returning villain, and I would love to pick the brains of the writers who sat down and said, what if there was a device that made Tempest Fugit the Flash, because that's what we're doing today.
Pretty much. That's right. So we'll be reviewing the episode Time Out of Joint, and we'll get into our four main categories. But of course, Cal, first, I must regale us with the official IMDb synopsis for this episode.
That's right, Liam. And this episode, speaking of it, originally aired on Fox, at least the Fox Kids programming block, according to the DCAU wiki, back on October the 8th, 1994, meaning we are just here shy of the 30, about a year and a couple of months shy of the 30-year anniversary, so 29-year anniversary coming up this year of this episode's debut. And of course, before we get to the IMDb synopsis, we must remind you that it is, of course, as it is each and every week, brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower and subscribe today to get the entire catalog of the Tim Talk podcast, which of course discussed this episode. You can also get the Jump on the Batwagon podcast, which is brought to you by the good folks at Watchtower Database. And they, too, have previously covered this episode. And you get our entire catalog there as well. And this very episode right now is sitting at youtube.com/thepodtower. So head on over there today, sign up for it, subscribe, get the notifications when every single one of these podcasts drops a new episode. You're not going to want to miss it. That's youtube.com/thepodtower.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Time Out of Joint, which was written by Alan Burnett and Steve Perry. Not that one. And directed by Dan Reba, with music by Carl Johnson and animation by Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. Batman and Robin battle the Clock King, who has a prototype device that allows him to operate at an extremely accelerated time rate apart from the rest of his reality.
What was that little stumble there at the end? I don't know what they just like picked a random word to jam in there at the end.
Yeah. I think they were maybe trying to explain that one part, which we'll get to, where the Batmobile is frozen in time for like 3 days. Mm-hmm. But also it's like there's some jargon about how they're out of phase with the dimension. I don't know. There's a lot of science mumbo jumbo in this episode that we'll get to in due time. But I would say C minus, maybe D plus for that synopsis.
I don't disagree with you on that, but we will try and make up for it with our own plot synopsis here, Liam, as we jump right into that. As we open up things here with, it's no secret who our villain is going to be because the title card spoils it. we see the Clock King front and center, well, maybe a little to the left in our Time Out of Joint title card. But we open up the episode with a pair of silhouettes bickering back and forth at a auction. We, of course, seasoned viewers would know by the voices who these bickering biddies are. They are, of course, Bruce and Dick, talking about the sheer expense and boredom that Dick is experiencing being at this auction that they're attending. And it appears that the last item is going up for bid, much to Dick's excitement. So we learned he is quite bored, as he keeps reminding Bruce. And as the final item goes up for your auction, we learn that it is a King Louis the 16th's clock, apparently. So that, of course, is going up, and it's no accident that it is going up for auction.
So, ladies and gentlemen, to Miss Veronica Vreeland for $200,000.
Bored. We've only been here 10 minutes.
10 minutes for you, 10 hours for me. I know it's for a good cause, but...
And now, ladies and gentlemen, this magnificent timepiece from the reign of Louis XVI. Who'll start the bidding at $400,000?
You gotta be kidding. I wouldn't use that for a doorstop.
Right on time, as usual.
I love that the beginning of this episode, sidebar here, this is set up just like a Batman 66 opening.
Oh, very much so.
Like, Bruce and Dick are at an auction for a clock from Louis the 16th. Like,
there's a very over-the-top British man.
Right.
Expositioning us about how important and valuable this clock is. And yes, yep. It's very much in the vein of a Batman 66 opening. That's a good shout.
Yep. And of course, it works out the same way, just as you might imagine it would in Batman 66, as the the bids continue to climb. The final bid is placed, or seemingly about to be placed. And it's going. And just as the auctioneer says gone, well, so is the clock. As Tempest Fugit, who was lurking about, that we saw him, he showed up and then he quickly disappeared. Dick even thought that he spotted him at one point. And but as the clock disappears, Bruce and Dick realize that Dick's hunch was indeed correct, that the Clock King is back and about. So we flash to GCPD, where Commissioner Gordon, Batman, and Robin are reviewing a tape of the auction. Liam, there just happened to be a surveillance tape of the auction. Thank goodness.
Naturally.
I guess for security purposes, if you're auctioning off a clock that's going for over $500,000, I guess security would be necessary. Or
sure.
But just happened to be there, and they slow it down. They slow this videotape down. Liam, another thing. Videotapes are a thing of the past, so some of our listeners may not know this, but it wasn't like a DVD or a streamed show where you could pause it down to the millisecond of getting the spot that you wanted to. Freezing getting a freeze frame on the right spot on a VCR was a thing of skill. You had to be able to press the pause button and account for like maybe a 2 to 3 second delay, depending on the machine that you're using. Commissioner Gordon was an ace at this because he freezed it at exactly the right spot where they could see this mysterious hand swiping the clock at the last second before disappearing.
I have 650 going. Gone. Blimey.
Back up. There. Freeze it.
That must be the hand everyone talks about. The one that's quicker than the eye.
So we don't have another invisible man running loose.
Then who could it be?
I think it's Temple Fugit, the Clock King.
What makes you think that?
Let's just call it a hunch. Better warn Mayor Hill, Jim. I doubt that time has healed Fugit's wound.
And that leads Batman to surmise that the Clock King is indeed back. Commissioner Gordon, a little confused, states, well, how do we know that he's back? And Batman just says that he has a hunch, and that he also has a hunch that the Clock King will be more than likely looking to fulfill what he was unable to do in the last appearance. And that, of course, is exacting revenge on the mayor of Gotham.
That's right. So we get a little bit of insight into exactly how the Clock King is pulling off all of this stuff, as we cut to a Dr. Wakati. Some sort of scientist who is
he's the father of quantum temporal theory. Please put some respect on the man's name.
Sure. That's true. That is how Batman refers to him later, but he's testing this interesting device, some sort of projector. He has a couple different things. He has a ball sort of suspended in midair, seemingly, and then also a potted plant, and as we watch, the potted plant grows out of the pot, completely blooms, and then wilts and dies all in a matter of seconds, and the ball doesn't move, as he explains to this Dr. Wakati, explains to his faithful assistant and helper, who we come to find out is none other than the Clock King himself, that the device seems to be working like a charm, and that it has a lot of applications, that it could help a lot of people.
6:15, sir. Time for breakfast. I've also brought you your medicine and the timer so you can take your pills on schedule.
You think of everything, don't you, Harold?
It is my job, sir. How goes your research, if I may ask?
Well enough. The iron ball has dropped a mere tenth of a millimeter since the experiment began last week. An extreme temporal discontinuity. And the accelerated effect is just as dramatic. 5 minutes ago, that plant was a seed.
Amazing, Dr. Wakati. Why, the possible applications are mind-boggling.
Indeed. We could get rid of radioactive waste in minutes instead of eons, put terminally ill people in stasis until a cure is found. And the question is mankind civilized enough to make the proper use of it?
You're right, Doctor. It's very important that this device be kept in the right hands.
So he's got noble intentions, but of course that's not exactly what the Clock King is up to. So he decides to once again take the device, and he's going off to track down the mayor as promised. And we cut to the mayor's office where Batman and Robin are on a stakeout. But as they're watching, we get the Clock King's perspective on how things look when he's moving at super fast speed using this this special device. So it's we'll talk about that maybe more in visuals. But essentially, the whole world is at a standstill, and he gets to sort of very slowly make his way through the doors, past all of the security, and up the stairwell after pressing for the elevator. That was a funny bit. He heads upstairs and confronts the mayor. The mayor tries to call for help, but suddenly his intercom system disappears as the Clock King sort of continues to show off the issues. But thankfully, Batman and Robin, suspecting that the Clock King would strike, set up some sort of device that make Mayor Hill's office lights brighter. A lot of interesting scientific devices on display in this episode, which sort of temporarily distracts the Clock King as Batman and Robin come in to save Mayor Hill. Clock King turns on his device and begins to try to make his escape. But as he does, he's not really watching where he's going, and he trips over a woman who had been falling down the stairs on his way up to the mayor's office. And as he falls down and she lands on top of him, his device is broken. So he has to book it without the use of his special powers now. But oh, wait, he just has another one. And so after a brief struggle where he gets away from from a security guard, and there's some cops they circle him and then just all dive at once at him. He finally gets his new device working. And decides to escape. But before he does, he looks over and he sees the Batmobile parked nearby, and gets sort of a mischievous look on his face. And then as time resumes to normal speed, we see him speeding away in the one of the unlocked police cars. And and so we begin to his plans unraveling as we go here. And Batman and Robin still kind of at back to square one, but they decide they're gonna go after him. They find the cop car a little bit later that it's been abandoned in a ravine, and they go and they get in the Batmobile. But then wouldn't you know it, Fugit put another one. So I guess he had three of these devices on him. He puts another one of these devices on the Batmobile, only instead of making it go fast, he actually uses it to, I guess it's kind of the Flash vibrating thing. He makes it stand still and vibrate sort of in and out of frequency with the universe. That's just a thing you can do with these devices, sure. I guess.
Sure.
And so Batman and Robin are sort of sitting ducks in the Batmobile, seemingly time going by ultra fast as they're sort of stuck in this little time bubble. And Batman notes that while they are shifting in and out of the third dimension here, if something was to collide with the Batmobile while it was shifting into the dimension, that it could cause a catastrophic nuclear explosion because of how fast they're vibrating in the Batmobile.
Sure.
So, yeah. And I guess meanwhile, before the Batmobile trap gets sprung, we cut back to Dr. Riccati's house where the Clock King has returned, having been briefly foiled. And as he comes down into his room, he sees that the doctor has gone looking for him, and he sort of reveals himself at that point and tells the old man that he's snooped in his business one too many times. So the Clock King has turned on his would-be benefactor, and that sort of is how we get to our very silly third act.
Harold.
Harold? What are you doing in my room?
I called for you, but got no answer. I thought something might be wrong.
There is something wrong, old man.
Why are you wearing that?
I'm afraid I haven't been altogether candid with you.
What are you going to do?
You'll find out, my good doctor, all in good time.
Yeah. Poor Dr. Wakati, who just thought he had a good friend in the man Harold, his butler.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It turns out that Harold is a super criminal, hell bent on killing the mayor. So, unfortunately, as we mentioned, Batman and Robin stuck in the Batmobile at this time. Batman using his brain and the scanner on the Batmobile, which he's able to locate mm-hmm. the attached device, does the old Batman Returns trick and shoots a hole through the bottom of the Batmobile. This time it's a direct hit, though, as opposed to having to reach down and grab it. Smashes the device, which causes them to slow down. But in the meantime... And the Batmobile crashes into a light pole, and Robin calculates that they've lost about 48 hours due to the fact that time was moving rapidly around them. So they're off on the Bat cycles to visit the doctor, who Batman discovered likely was on the other end of where the Clock King dumped the police car. There was one train that went past there at that time, and it went out to the doctor's estate. So he and Robin speed out there. They discover that Dr. Wakati has been unfortunately placed in suspended animation at the time that the Clock King attacked him. But thankfully, the Clock King was nice enough to share some information with Dr. Wakati, saying that finally Mayor Hill will have his day in court. And Batman realizes that they are dedicating the new courthouse that day. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. it's just 2 minutes away, and they are not only 30 minutes away, but they are in a dead zone.
He was the one person in the world I trusted. Is it any wonder I prefer being a recluse?
What else did he say, Dr. Wakati?
He was babbling, said something about the mayor, about how he was finally going to get his day in court.
Day in court? The new courthouse. The mayor is dedicating it today at 10 o'clock.
That's 2 minutes from now. We'd better call the cops and...
You can't. I have no phones. Your phone won't work, Batman. This area is a dead zone. I chose it so my experiments would be free of electromagnetic interference.
It'll take at least a half hour for us to make it back on the bikes.
You have 30 seconds to show us how to use these.
I love 30 years ago, Batman was like the first one to experience what it's like when you don't have a cell phone.
No bars.
Yep, zero
bars on the Bat cell phone.
No actual cell phone in this man's house, and or telephone, no landline, and no bars, no signal. So Batman has no way of getting in touch with the police to warn them, but he has an idea. Thankfully, he grabs two of the devices that Dr. Wakati created and tells them he's got 30 seconds to tell them how they work. So we cut back to the courthouse, where Mayor Hill is about to go on and slam a giant gavel down to dedicate the opening of this new courthouse. And a Temple Fugit, the Clock King, is there freezing time, placing a explosive underneath the podium so that when the gavel slams down, the bomb will go off, triggering it, killing not only Mayor Hill, but everyone in attendance there, destroying the courthouse as well, getting sweet, sweet revenge. But the Clock King, unfortunately, he as most villains are, his hubris gets in the way as he decides to keep time slowed down in and around him, wanting to savor the moment as the bomb goes off. And just as the gavel is coming down, Batman and Robin show up, and Batman jumps up on the stage. But unfortunately, he's a hair too late as the gavel comes down. The bomb has been triggered, but don't worry, Batman's the Flash. Because mm-hmm. he grabs the bomb as it begins to go off, and of course, with the device attached, begins running faster than the speed of light across the Gotham River out into the middle of it, carrying the bomb as it's slowly detonating. And he is able to get it outside, far away from the courthouse, detonating and causing no harm at all. Just in time, though, we cut back as the Clock King turns back on his device in an attempt to escape, but Robin's right there and trips him up, and as he falls, the Clock King, don't you just hate it when you land on your scientific mumbo-jumbo time machine and break it into a million pieces? It's the worst.
And I guess he didn't have an extra one this time.
No, he used all his extras on the Batmobile gimmick, and when he fell over the... tripped over the lady way out of the police station.
And he had to use the one to suspend Dr. Wakati. So
that's true. Absolutely. Yeah. He did not have unlimited time machines, apparently. So
he had about six.
Right. We have a little postscript at that point as we are back at Dr. Wakati's estate. And we learn that he's putting the hold on this technology that time, unfortunately, is not on the side of humans, as he realizes that they're not quite ready for this device to be in their hands. So he suspends and refuses to tell anybody about it. So the only people who know about it are Batman, Robin, the Clock King, and this doctor. What could possibly go wrong? That's I guess that wraps us up as we get a funny little quip there as Robin mentions that it's a shame that he won't be sharing that technology with the world, because where he's going, the Clock King would likely covet something that will help the days go by quicker, as we see him loaded in the back of a paddy wagon and sent off to prison. And that ends the episode.
Yep, all's well that ends well. I guess.
Don't worry. This crazy sci-fi time machine thing never comes back again. So
nope.
Don't have to worry about it.
So as we do, we've already kind of been sharing our thoughts, but this episode is dumb.
Yes.
This episode is really dumb. It's dumb just as like the amount of like Deus Ex Machina that you have to accept here, of a device that you can wear on your hip that can make you run at the speed of light. And right. Also, apparently, you can put it on your hip and then drive a motorcycle at the speed of light, or you can attach it to a vehicle and make it go slow or fast or whatever.
Or a bomb. Or
a bomb.
Yep. Yeah.
It's just... there's a lot of you can just do whatever, because it's basically magic in this episode. And
it's whatever you need it to in whatever moment for whatever plot point of the story is needed.
Yeah, I think that's why it's like it doesn't even feel like it follows the same rule of like a time machine or like a something similar that does like this, like a super speed suit or something. Like it just doesn't feel like it follows any particular rules. It just so I think that's part of the reason I didn't really like it. I didn't like the other part. We've talked about this before. I think it was when we reviewed the last Ra's al Ghul one, where they go to Egypt and fight the zombie, where it's like, I know later on there's aliens and time travel and all this stuff, but it doesn't work in this original BTS run for me when we get like really sci-fi or fantasy with the plot. And then the third thing that I think doesn't work is that it takes what I thought was the most interesting thing about the Clock King. It's been a very long time since we reviewed that original episode, but the most interesting thing about that guy is he's like a 58-year-old man,
right?
But he's so smart and so attentive to timing and detail that he's able to run Batman and the cops ragged and kidnap the mayor of a major American city just because he's so smart and witty. And then here it's like, well, he doesn't have to be smart. In fact, he's kind of an oaf in this episode.
Yeah.
You know, bumbling and tripping. He doesn't invent the device, which is fine. He wasn't a doctor in the last episode. He was a lawyer or something. so it's fine that he didn't create the device, but he's just kind of this bumbling guy. Like, it just feels like this could have been anybody. This could have been any villain. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess it's vaguely time related, so it made sense to break out the Clock King again for this episode. But it's just not good. It's just not it's a fun enough. Like, I didn't hate watching it, but sure. Like, when you begin to look at this from a more critical lens, like I don't think it fits the series just mm-hmm. as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
The device is too hand wavy for mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. And three, you've taken what was a pretty fun, interesting take on the villain, on a villain like the Clock King in the first episode, and just made him a guy with a magic time machine.
Right.
And so that's way less interesting than what he was the first time.
Yeah, remember the first episode? He was a guy with OCD that had this weird grudge against the mayor because mm-hmm. he made him late for a court date. Remember, like, that was
right.
That was the whole thing. Like, he had, and that made it quirky enough to be like, this guy is goofy. It wasn't. I feel like this turns him into a Batman 66 villain. Like, that's kind of what this is. Like, this whole episode would feel right at home as a Batman 66 episode, and that would have been mm-hmm. okay, because that over the top, like, goofiness, somewhat sci-fi, whatever of the era would have worked. But to your point, I wholeheartedly agree with you. Looking at this now, does not fit with the general theme of the series. It's interesting because I actually remember really loving this episode as kids, like mm-hmm. kind of cool. Like, Batman has this device and him and Robin are on the bat cycles and they're going a bajillion miles an hour. Mm-hmm. You get the like frozen in time thing. And like, there are bits of it that were fun as a kid. And mm-hmm. then, and maybe that's what Alan Burdett and Mr. Perry kind of sat out to do here. Like, we're just going to make a fun, goofy episode that somewhat homages Batman 66 while also giving kids a fun, memorable thing.
Right.
Which is okay. From time to time, this show was mm-hmm. okay to step away from, like, you know, It's Never Too Late and the mob bosses and crime families of a lot of those other episodes. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like such a big departure from this, and when you go completely into science fiction, especially yeah. because there's no shoehorning it into like the technology of the time. They don't even attempt to explain how the doctor came up with this device. It's just like, he created mm-hmm. it, he's the expert, he created a device that slows down and speeds up time, and it just so happens that the Clock King is disguised as his butler and mm-hmm. steals the technology, has access to it because of that. So, and then we'll see what happens. Then now he can use it to carry out his revenge on Mayor Hill. So I don't know. I feel like they should have either just completely departed from the Mayor Hill storyline and done something else, or and turned him into a cartoon character, Saturday morning cartoon character villain, or maybe not done this. But yeah.
Well, it's funny because there's even like a reference at one point where when they're watching the footage and they aren't really sure what happened, where when they see he's moving really fast, they're like, oh, thank God it's not another invisible man. Right. Which it's like, that, even though that's very wacky sci-fi, that episode works for some reason, where it's like a guy in a weird like translucent suit and then he pours like weird paint that makes him invisible on himself. Like, I don't know why that works and this one doesn't. Maybe because they try a little harder to like explain how it works and how it's like reflecting light and the environment around it. It's more like a mirror than it is like just turning someone invisible. But for some reason, that, I think that one works, but this, maybe because it's less explained within the universe, it's just, here's the device, this guy built it because he's really smart and that's all you're getting.
Also, if you wanted to play a game that got you drunk very quickly, you could play a take a shot every time they do a clock pun. Mm-hmm. I think from the very first like two lines of the episode all the way up through the very last line of the episode, there are some type of of clock pun, which I like puns. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. It was a little bit overkill.
In that way, yeah, it kind of reminds me of like one of those very, very early episodes of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we went back to The Last Laugh last year as part of we re-reviewed it with Ted from Watchtower Database.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we were like, wow, this episode is very high concept and it's very silly. And most of the dialogue is very like pun heavy, quip heavy.
Right.
You know, feels like a Batman 66 episode. And we talked then about how, you know, they were still kind of finding their way in the series in the beginning, and they would sort of solicit scripts from, you know, from animation writers who were around that time, you know, the freelance animation writers. So who obviously the show hadn't been on the air yet, so they didn't really know what was too broad or too over the top to work on this show. But this is like, we're like 70 some episodes into an 85 episode run here. Like, we've long since established what I feel like what can and can't be accepted as a concept in the series. So it's like, yeah, it feels somehow like a very early episode of the series, despite it coming so late in the run.
Yeah, I agreed. And I don't think we've given our scores here, but I will kick us off here. I went with a 4 out of 10 for this episode. I didn't feel like I was back and forth between a 4 and a 5 because there are parts that I like, mm-hmm. you know, that I remember having nostalgic feelings for as a kid, but I could not let my nostalgia overrule like my general the integrity as a broadcast journalist and say no this isn't a great one. So I settled on a 4 out of 10 for this.
Well, don't feel too bad about that, Cal, because I gave it a 2 out of 10.
Woo!
Like I said,
oh
I just,
my gosh,
it's like I just feel like for all the reasons we just talked about, I don't care for the concept. I don't think it fits in this world. I don't even really think it would. I don't even think this could be like a, I guess this could be like a JLU episode,
mm-hmm.
but like, even then I feel like they'd have to do some sort of explanation of like how this works, and, or they, it would be fleshed out better by the time JLU came around, I think.
Yeah.
You know, if, you know, if people like, you know, Dwayne McDuffie and James Tucker and people like that had a chance to take a pass over the script, I think maybe it could have. But again, it's Alan Burnett and Steve Perry, both veterans of this series. It's not like it's, you know, like it isn't a spec script from a, you know, a freelancer. So it's like, it's not like people who don't know the series wrote this episode, which is, I think, the other part of it that, you know, this has to be the lowest score I've ever given an Alan Burnett script, I would have to think. But yeah, I don't know. I just, it's like I said, I don't like the concept. I don't think it fits within the world. And I think it makes a pretty fun, who had been this kind of fun one-off villain, much less interesting than he was the first time around, in favor of kind of a mindless kid show adventure episode, which again, it's not the end of the world. And again, not every episode is going to be a home run, but yeah, just, I think when I have that many like deep-seated problems with the episode, I can't go much higher than that on my plot score.
Wow, that's a I'd be interested to know whether or not we've had a lower, what's the last time you gave, maybe Eternal Youth, I feel like got maybe around that, but wow, that's a might be an all-time low for that one. But yeah, understandably so, based on the
I gave Superman's Pal a 0 out of 10, so it's not the
wow. I'm talking about these original Batman. Yeah.
Oh, for Batman episodes, I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. Superman's Pal is in a league of its own. But let's move on here, Liam. Let's move on to perhaps brighter skies and, you know, a lighter topic here as we get into talking about this week's visuals and animation. Dong Yang Animation credited, I believe, with the animation for this week. We touched on it a little bit. There is, while the plot maybe goofy, putting it nicely, I think the visuals that at least accompanied the powers that this machine bestowed upon its wearers was certainly worth talking about. That's probably the big picture thing that we can talk about mostly. But yeah, what did you think of, I'll start off, we get Clock King gets some new garb. He's no longer in the Bruce Wayne, shopping in the Bruce Wayne aisle. He doesn't have brown and yellow. He's got himself a nice sleek black, I guess it's his butler outfit. He's wearing a black tux here. So he does look a little bit different. I think character models were wildly inconsistent a lot. There's one scene where Mayor Hill is sitting in his chair receiving a phone call and his nose literally shifts into the shape of like the Joker's nose. I was like, is he turning into the Joker? What is happening here? Did I forget a plot point here that the Joker is secretly Mayor Hill? Nope, it was just some inconsistent animation. Scene to scene, also, I would say that the Clock King sort of differs how he looks. He looks a little more like doughy in a couple of the episodes or a couple of the scenes. A little bit inconsistent there. But overall, I think there's plenty to talk about as far as the rest of the episode is concerned, non-character model. What did you have as far as notes for visuals for this week?
Yeah, I generally speaking, I liked the visualization of the Clock King going into the mayor's office in the super slow-mo. I think that's kind of a fun where everything kind of turns black and white except for the Clock King.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a fun way to visualize that when he sort of walks in and everything's kind of frozen in midair, except that there's like a little desk fan in the room and the blades are very slowly turning.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's kind of a clever visual way of looking at things there. So I liked that sequence. I liked the bit towards the end of the episode where Batman and Robin are driving on their bat cycles towards the city, and they're sort of marveling at everything, and Robin sort of looks to the side and they cut up to a bird and a plane in the sky that are kind of stationary because of how fast they're moving. And if we did not mention this in plot, we get a Superman reference here with Robin declaring that they're going faster than a speeding bullet, and which is a fun little homage. Although, what does that mean in this universe if Superman's real? never mind. But
don't
think
too hard. Just enjoy it.
Yes. And the end there, where Batman grabs the bomb is slowly exploding, and Batman's basically holding a fireball. He's like Ryu from Street Fighter as he's running out to see. Speaking of Superman, he goes with the Superman method of bomb disposal and just throws it in the harbor. So and from there I like that sequence. It's kind of fun. This is a prototype. I know Bruce Timm has gone on the record saying that he never really felt like, even when they were working on Justice League and JLU, he never felt like they quite nailed super speed as like a visual concept in the show. But I think it works pretty well for what they ask of it here. And then I was trying to tell, it looked to me when the Batmobile sequence where they're stuck in hyper time or whatever, and you don't see the cars whizzing past them, you just see headlights.
Mm-hmm.
That looked almost, it looked like proto, like 3D graphics, like CGI. Mm. I didn't see anything in the credits that reckon, like, usually there's like 3D animation provided by X or Y. I didn't see anything like that in the credits, but it had sort of an interesting effect because you have sort of the background and the Batmobile itself, because it's not moving, is sort of painted right into that background.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just have just these sort of wispy lights moving past. It was like, for the time, I think that effect is pretty neat.
It's outstanding. I thought that sequence was, I mean, that was the big like arrows pointing to it in my notes thing that I have here, is like that sequence where you have the static painted Batmobile and then the animated lights kind of moving around it. That, for in my brain, that scene goes on for like two commercial breaks. Like, but it, in reality, it is solved in approximately 45 seconds. Like very short sequence. But maybe it, as a child, time just moved slower, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a time thing. But it, in this case, it, incredibly well done, especially for if the limited animation styles or skills available to them, technology available to them at the time. You know, I think the way that the lights kind of show up, disappear, they pass over, then you see another light. It wasn't just, I'm sure they did sort of loop the animation in some form or fashion, but it didn't, because the image was statically sort of moving across the screen at the same time, you didn't quite pick up that it was just the same recycled animation. So I thought that was maybe the best sequence of the episode.
I think it's a lot of fun, and that's definitely the standout action piece of the episode. Like I said, I liked the other kind of speed sequences, and that the shot, there's like a shot of kind of a side profile shot of them on the bat cycles driving at this super fast speed that we talked about it last week. It was made into one of those Adventures of Batman and Robin trading cards. So that image is kind of burned into my brain permanently. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some good stuff in this episode, probably the hallmark of which is that sequence in the Batmobile with all the lights and everything. So I ended up going with a pretty strong 8 out of 10 for my visual score.
Yeah, I went with the same exact score. I love all the time frozen sequences. I love the way that they chose to visualize. It kind of reminded me of the scene in, is it the Justice League episode where the Flash gets stuck in time in the in the Dr. Destiny episode, I think.
Correct.
And the color sort of drains out of everything as time slows down. I don't know if that was a direct homage or just a coincidence, but same thing happened there where the Flash, usually you just see him kind of whiz past. You do see some of the visualization of his powers, but to start out here with, as we mentioned, this is very much like this should be the Flash in this episode using these powers and how his powers are typically visualized. So I like the slowdown, the way that things were frozen. I even like, you know, when Tempest Fugue goes to use the elevator and he says, "Silly me," after he presses the button and realizes that he's not going to sit there and wait for the elevator to arrive when he's in the mayor's penthouse. So there's a lot that I enjoyed. I liked the silhouettes right at the beginning, as I mentioned, where they don't give you the visual of mm-hmm. Bruce and Dick talking to each other.
Yeah, they do a little Mystery Science Theater thing.
Yeah, it was. I liked that. It was a nice little artistic touch there. I think that the bat cycle scene is also kind of just in my head is just one of the coolest things, because it's Batman and Robin and they're wearing the helmets and they're going a bajillion miles an hour and you just see the speed trail going behind them. But yeah, overall, high scores from both of us on this, on a very visually fun episode. Despite the plot maybe not being quite redeemable. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw Shirley Walker was supervisor for this, but I don't think she was responsible for the actual music. Is that correct?
Correct. We have Carl Johnson on the call this week, which is not a name. I know Harvey Cohen, I know Lolita Ritmanis and all of our regulars, but Mr. Johnson is not a name that I feel like we see too often, even back in these BTOS days. So, that being said, I like, we get like a Clock King theme that kind of permeates the whole episode that I think works pretty well for it. And, mixed in with the Batman theme and everything there, I think it kind of gives a good sort of repeated film for the episode. It kind of loops, but maybe that works because we're trapped in time for the episode.
Now that's a very good point. Yeah, I see Mr. Johnson's credits look like there are a lot of direct to video Disney stuff for the most part. But him taking, I believe that's the same theme that they used in the original Clock King episode. Also, it's that is it a 3/4 time? What is that? It's kind of like a waltz. You get the and then it repeats just over and over again, and then you kind of get the strings and the horns come in. And there was an alternate theme that I really liked outside of the Clock King's theme, and that's when you do have the time, like the time freeze, so things kind of slow down and you get I think it's maybe some keys or like a xylophone almost. You just kind of get some. So it's very whimsical sounding, but also it's kind of ominous at the same time because it's played in such a minor key. But that punctuates both the initial time and that in the auction scene and kind of gives it that eerie, you know, mad scientist. What do we, you know, what is the Clock King up to? And then it's played as he's sort of walking in through the mayor's penthouse. And then again, at the end is as the gavel is coming down, of course, breaking in with Batman and Robin showing up. But I don't recall really hearing much of the Batman theme for the episode. There wasn't much time or place for Batman to use it because there's no real fight scene here. We have Batman saving the mayor from a bomb, but I think they did learn from the first episode that because the Clock King could not be a physical threat to Batman, the fisticuffs have to be limited. Otherwise, it makes Batman look extremely inept. To be outwitted by this 60-something-year-old man. But yeah, overall, I thought the music was really strong. It's instantly memorable. It has the beat that kind of feels like a clock ticking or like almost like a grandfather clock type swing back and forth. I really, really enjoyed it. It brought me back. It's like, okay, yeah, this is the time out of joint. This is the Clock King, instantly recognizable theme for him. I feel like it adds to both the scenes with that theme, as well as the scenes with the time being frozen. So it played a huge part for me for this week's episode. I felt like it was its own character, which always gets an extra point when I'm running down my score. So I ended up going with a very strong 9 out of 10 for music this week. What about you?
Yeah, I went with a 7 out of 10. So I think it's pretty similar there for all the reasons you mentioned. Yeah, I like that Clock King theme. I think it works. And to your point, putting like a special sort of tone on it when we're in that hyper time, so to speak, I think was a nice touch there as well.
All right, William, well, that would begin to take us to our final category of the day, which of course is going to be talking about our voice cast for this week. Not a huge one this week because we don't have a lot of different characters, but a lot of returning favorites, series regulars, and of course a returning villain voiced once again by its original actor. Let's go ahead and talk about this week's voice cast.
Absolutely. So we have, we have Bob Hastings as Commissioner Gordon. We get a little bit more than usual from Lloyd Bachner as Mayor Hill. Him getting to sort of play off the previous episode as mentioned. Although again, we don't get another thing that, and this is a plot issue, not a voice actor issue, but, another thing that I think made that episode so interesting was how much of the interaction between Clock King and Mayor Hill was a part of that episode and how well the two voice actors played off of each other, which unfortunately we don't get as much of here, but still, I think a good performance by Mr. Bachner. Elsewhere in the episode, we have Dr. Wakati, as mentioned, played by Roscoe Lee Brown, which you may not recognize that name, but you would probably know him as the voice of the Kingpin on the Spider-Man animated series that was being produced at the same time. This is kind of the reverse of the Mark Hamill thing, where he's better known for playing the Spider-Man villain than on his role here. But a lot of crossover in those voice casts, those Marvel shows and Batman the Animated Series at the time. And then,
yeah, I think he's great, by the way. I think he's very didn't have a ton to do for the episode, mm-hmm. but I thought he was very strong, and I would not have picked him out as the Kingpin had you not said so. So disguised it enough with sort of a native African accent sort of mm-hmm. to blend that in there. So yeah, pretty strong for what he was asked for.
Absolutely. And then I just want to mention, this is more of just like a fun little tidbit. So playing the auctioneer in this episode, who by the way was based visually on an old English actor named Terry Thomas, is a guy by the name of Alan Oppenheimer. Mm-hmm. And if you're curious, yes, he's related to that Oppenheimer. He's what? Like third cousin of the man who created the atomic bomb. And then also he voiced Man-at-Arms in the original He-Man, the animated series.
I'm not sure which one he's more known for which notorious for.
I guess maybe it's a more recent thing to look back at the creation of such a device with a bit less awe and a bit more horror.
Yeah.
Over what we have wrought.
Yeah.
But you didn't think about changing that name. Like, I guess it just wasn't maybe it's a point of pride at that point in old Hollywood. But yeah, I just thought when I saw that, I was like, well, how many people with that last name do you come across? And sure enough, according to Google, which I believe is always right, he is the third cousin of the Oppenheimer who created the atomic bomb. So just had to mention that there, because like how often are we gonna make a connection like that?
I'm gonna say the first time, last time, only time, unless Mr. Oppenheimer plays another role, which at least according to the DCAU wiki, he's not listed as voicing any additional voices in the DCAU. So I'm going to say this might be the one and only time. So good and for you for bringing it up.
That's right. Mildly topical because the movie's coming out.
Oh, that's right.
Mildly topical if you're listening to this when we originally debuted the episode in July of 2023. Mm-hmm. But yes, then of course we have our main villain, Alan Rations, returning as Clock King, probably most famously from his turn on LA Law. But I still like him as the Clock King. This is very, like, just this completely humorless man. He is just, he's so abrupt and serious. Even when he's pretending to be like the faithful butler and assistant to Dr. Wakati, he still talks like the Clock King. And you'd think normally that would be like a detriment as a voice actor, because you'd be like, he's not showing a lot of range. But somehow it works. Like for this character who we've talked about has like clear and severe neurological disorders. Like, he shouldn't sound any different even when he's, you know, quote unquote undercover to me. So I still adore him as the Clock King, even if I feel he was hamstrung by a less than plot in this case.
Yeah, the two lines that got me were when they used the flash bulbs to blind him and he goes, "Ah, my eye."
Get ready.
And then later on, as he's escaping from the mayor's penthouse and stumbles across Batman's vehicle and goes, "The Batmobile." Ah.
The Batmobile. Ah.
He's so wacky.
But so strange. Like, what an interesting choice of delivery for both of those lines. But fits the idiosyncratic nature of that character as we established at least in the first episode. So yeah,
absolutely.
That deep down underneath of it, he's a bumbling fool, a far cry from the character that eventually would lead Task Force X.
That's right.
In Justice League Unlimited.
That's right. And then of course we have our dynamic duo this week once again: Lauren Lester as Robin and Kevin Conroy as Batman. They don't got much to do, like you said, other than Lauren Lester gets a lot of clock and time puns, and Batman has to deliver a lot of dialogue exposition about Dr. Wakati being the father of chronal physics or whatever, and explaining how they're trapped in hyper time or whatever is going on when they're in the Batmobile and all that. So. A lot of it's an educational episode for Kevin Conroy and a pun heavy episode for Lauren Lester and but again it's not really their show, it's really Mr. Rations as the Clock King who does most of the heavy lifting in this one.
Yeah, I would agree. Unfortunately for Mr. Lester, I don't feel like he was given a lot of great material to work with. It's a lot of bad time puns. And not a ton for the late Mr. Conroy to do in the episode. So basing that off of everybody else's performance, I would say I gave it a 6 out of 10. I just, there wasn't anything that I felt really blew me away. I did laugh at the Clock King's goofy lines, but I didn't think there was one. I remember in the first episode in that the Clock King, that sort of diatribe he gives at the end where he kind of reveals to the mayor why he's out for revenge, how passionately insane he sounds. Yes. Like declaring his anger at him for making him late for this court case. So yeah, I don't think we had equal moments here for this episode. So for all that, I ended up giving it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I went 5 out of 10. So not much different there. Like I like him. Like he's just such a weird, such a weird and fun performance from Mr. Rations. And I did like Mr. Brown as Dr. Wakati as well. But yeah, just not a lot to write home about. Not a lot of, like we said, it's such a weird and kind of fluff plot that there's not a lot of big dramatic moments for any of our actors to really sink their teeth into with this one.
Agreed. All right, Liam, well, that will begin to wrap things up here. So let's tally up those final scores. Adding everything up from our four categories, I end up with a 27 out of 40. What about you?
We were only one or two apart, I think, in each category, but it ended up with me being at a final score of 22 out of 40. So wait, I don't
here. How is that possible?
I don't know.
I guess there was a 2 difference in plot. We had a 2 difference in music, and we had a 1 difference in voice acting. So that checks
5. Yeah,
that would be 5 in my little head math there. So I guess it makes sense. All right, question of the day here: returning character comes back later on in Justice League Unlimited, is sort of the bow on the end of that first Clock King episode? Question mark. Mm-hmm. Where do you land? Where do you land, Liam? Is this a must watch?
No, I think you can skip this one.
Skip it. Yeah, I think
because when he comes back in JLU, he's the timing guy. He's
right.
He's plotted out the heist down to the second. It doesn't involve any sci-fi time devices. So I think we can kind of skip this one. It's not really referenced again. These devices don't come back. There's not really a reason.
Yeah, I agree. I unfortunately, as cool as it was as a kid watching this episode, I think, unfortunately, at this point, even though it is a follow-up, nothing really changes before or after this episode. As you mentioned, the devices don't come back. He doesn't come back in this series or in the new Batman Adventures. There's a tie-in comic that you posted on our socials this week. Head over to Instagram at DCAU Review if you want to check out Liam's little drop of that from the is that Gotham Adventures, I think?
It's Batman Adventures Volume 2, which was the right. Where they started drawing him like the Justice League Batman.
There you go. So check that out. If you haven't read that, check out our little synopsis on the Instagrams. But yep, skip it and find a better episode to watch if you're looking for a rewatch.
Which, I mean, given the fact that we got into the 20s, I think that does speak highly of our thoughts on the visuals and the animation. So it's not as if this episode is completely bereft of fun, but it's just not it's not one I plan on revisiting too often in the future.
All right, Liam, let's wrap things up here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, we would love your support if you liked the podcast. Head on over to your favorite podcast app, wherever you listen to us, and smash that subscribe button. That helps us out. If your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a review like Apple or Spotify, go ahead and do so. Leave a 5-star review if you like us that much. And then if it allows you to leave a little blurb, a little paragraph about what you like, please feel free to do so. Even if you've left one before, I've heard that Apple allows you to leave multiple reviews. So if you're feeling kind and generous and want to take a couple of minutes to support us, that is a fun, easy, free way of doing so. And Liam and I always get a kick out of reading those reviews when they do pop up. So thank you to those that have taken the time and will continue to take the time to do so. If you also want to support the podcast monetarily, there's a couple of ways to do that. There are links in the show notes, one to our store and one to the donation button. You can buy Liam and myself a coffee. Thank you to our subscribers also. There's an option to subscribe to the podcast. Thank you to those that every month give us some money and just for making this podcast. So thank you to our supporters for doing that. as we mentioned at the top, head on over to youtube.com/thepodtower, subscribe there, and hey, comment on those videos too if you want to interact with us. You got many different mediums of interacting with us now. As we mentioned at the top, you have Twitter. As long as that website still exists, you have Instagram, you have Threads, so long as that website still exists. You got a lot of different ways to talk to us, to share your opinions, your thoughts, slide into the DMs, whatever mode of talking to us publicly is available on one of those sites, do so. But follow us on all of those socials. And there you will learn quite often what our next episode is before we even talk about it. But Liam, we will be dropping it here next week. And just what episode will we be reviewing next week?
That's right, Cal. We got another fun one. And I have to imagine one of the last non-Robin featuring episodes we have remaining in our BTAS catalog here. That being the episode Catwalk, which not only sees the return of Selina Kyle, but also features Scarface and the Ventriloquist, I believe. So
yeah,
a somewhat rare villain team up episode next week to talk about. So, and not one, I feel like we both had this one on tape, but also didn't watch it very often.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not seen this episode in many a year. So looking
forward. Remember a giant whale. So from my recollection, so
sounds about right. And I remember the puppet gets destroyed at the end.
Yep, that's spoiler alert. That's a safe bet. Death, correct. Taxes and some sort of disembodiment of the puppet man.
That's right. So looking forward to talking with Catwalk, talking about Catwalk next week.
But until then, I'm Cal,
and I'm Liam,
and we will talk to you on that next episode of the DCAU review.
Bye-bye.